On the Pilot TV podcast this week, there is a funeral to attend as the fourth season of Trying kicks off on Apple. Things are getting weird in Tasmania thanks to Bay of Fire on ITV. And with a little bit of luck, we can make it through the night with Vicky McClure, who's starring in Insomnia on Paramount+. Plus, Rafe Spall and Esther Smith join us on the show to talk Trying. I'm James Dyer, and welcome to the Pilot TV podcast, your essential guide to every show that matters, and a podcast that has only recently been made aware of what we're just going to call AI chapter headings. So on Pilot Plus, if you were listening to Pilot Plus on Thursday, you subscribe to Pilot Plus. If you don't, then why not? But if you do, you will notice that someone on that show thanked us for the chapter headings on the timeline of the show, which rather threw us because we haven't done any. And we didn't know what that was. So, you know, I asked someone to explain, and thankfully, many of our listeners wrote in to explain what they were. But they pointed out that Spotify now apparently uses AI to create chapter headings for the podcasts on that platform. So, for example, were you to look at last week's Pilot TV podcast, the chapters are as follows. Chapter 1, Schmidt Gadoon, which I can only assume was us talking about Schmigadoon briefly. Chapter 2, Game of Thrones stage play. Okay, fair enough. Chapter 3, Snowpiercer. Chapter 4, Acolyte. Chapter 5, Attack of Fundamental Minutes. That's right, Attack of Fundamental Minutes, which apparently we're thinking was Attack of the Phantom Menace or something like that. We think it was a Phantom Menace thing, it's entirely sure.
This pod sounds like a hoot. Yeah.
Next chapter, Taylor Swift versus Scooter Braun. Now, sure, why not? Next chapter was just social media. Then we had Brian Fuller leaves Camp Crystal Lake. Okay, so that was from the news section. That makes sense. The Gathering, and then Orphan Black Echoes, which is a show we'll get to a little bit later on. but yeah, this is absolutely wild. So Spotify are now AI generating titles. So I'm wondering if we can have a little bit of fun with Spotify. So this is Pilot TV, episode 287, chapter 1, The Rise and Fall of Imperial Badgers. And speaking of Imperial Badgers, I'm joined today, even though we're remote as we've been exiled from the studio this week, by my two regular woodland creatures, Wise Owl Boyd Hilton and Angry Ferret Kay Ribeiro, who returns after her extended holiday. How was it, Kay? How was your time off?
It was delightful, thank you. It was very relaxing and I enjoyed myself immensely, but of course missed you both.
Of course you did. Terribly. Of course you did. And we missed you too, Kay. But crucially, while you were off, did you take the time to watch anything exciting that you can now regale us with in the What We've Been Watching segment?
I did. Do you know what I did? I watched a lot. So I'm going to rattle through it because some of them will be more interesting than others for you, particularly James. But first of all, I caught up with and watched the whole of Red Eye. So you'll remember that one. That was the aeroplane saga where they were going back and forth to China and Richard Armitage's character was being accused of a murder that he says he didn't commit, a crime. But I found it hugely entertaining and very watchable. So yeah, completed that.
What happens in the end?
I can't tell you. I don't want to spoil it for you. But it is crazy. It is like a bit cuckoo bong. But like I said, I had to just like, I rattle through it. So
Was the ending like believable though? How did it compare to Hijack, for example?
I felt like Hijack was, I'm trying to think how, I think Hijack was more believable. Yeah, it was definitely was more believable. Now, the thing that I was obsessed with, and I've only watched one episode because I'm trying to ration myself. I don't even know if they've dropped it all, if it's week by week. The Gathering, which I believe you have talked about.
Yes.
I just thought it was so good. The writing was brilliant. The characters well drawn. And I was completely blown away by Eva Morgan, who plays the victim Kelly. And I just can't believe that's her first professional role. She's just like incredible and definitely one to watch. So all the young actors actually, I have to say, were great, but...
And it's the writer Helen Walsh's first TV drama as well, mainly known as a novelist.
God. Yeah. Okay. Overachiever. So, yes, that was, I just cannot get enough of that. And I'm trying to, did they drop it all or is it just week by week?
I think they've dropped it all. I think. I can't remember because I watched the first four on screeners, obviously, but I'm pretty sure they've dropped it all, yeah.
Because I'm trying to savor it. I don't want to hurtle through it, but yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, also finished The Gilded Age season 2 on Sky Atlantic. Yes, I went back to it, I know.
You're literally the only person watching The Gilded Age.
I know, but I hadn't finished it. And I was someone asked us the other day, how do we decide what to watch? And I was just in the mood for a period drama. And so I continued and finished it. And I really like the characters, like Cynthia Nixon's character, particularly Ada. Justice for Ada, I'm not going to say any more, but I think Julian Fellowes did her dirty a little bit. And then what else? Right, these are the ones I will, you know, go through quickly. Selling the OC, one word, meh. This season, if you're thinking of watching it, I would just warn you, it's not amazing. Also, oh, this is great. And if you haven't watched it, I'd recommend Robin Ryland's Grand Tour on BBC One. Now, I know it's like people that, James, you probably aren't familiar with slash have time for. So that's Rob Rinder and Ryland Clark. But, and they're following in the footsteps of Lord Byron, the tour he did 200 plus years ago. And they go to Venice and Florence and Rome. But it is really good. It's so good. And it's like fun and it's informative. And it's just really quite moving.
Yes, that's true. I agree.
I mean,
no, so disrespectful.
What?
Hustling and bustling and then just leaving your bloody seat.
Pardon me for trying to get, I'm just trying to get supportive material. The listeners wouldn't know.
And then finally, two things that aren't out yet, but I really enjoyed them. And I'm sure we'll review at some point. Queenie on Channel 4. So that's based on the book by Candice Carty-Williams that I really loved. And they've made an adaptation of it. And so all I'll say is that if you've read the book, you're not going to be disappointed. And there's great casting. And finally, I was lucky enough to see the first episode of the second series of We Are Lady Parts, which I know is a comedy, James, you liked.
Yes, very much so.
It's the subversive, funny comedy about an all-female Muslim punk
indeed.
Rock band.
And Nida Mansour is going to be on this very podcast quite soon to talk about it.
How exciting. Mm. Yeah. They've got some great cameos, particularly in episode 2. So yeah, it's really good. It's on top form.
Wow. You seem to have used your time off to do nothing but watch television, which is dedication. I'm impressed. Very impressed.
I love TV.
Well,
what can I say?
Boydie and I love TV, but the one thing we apparently love more than TV is the theatre, because Boydie and I went to the theatre last night, didn't we, Boydie? Because as the person who Boydie loves the most on this podcast, I was selected as the best one to accompany him as his plus one to the Fawlty Towers theatre production.
Right. Don't try and get between me and Boydo. Right. I see what you're doing here. I affectionately call this the lads' night out.
That's right.
And I was excited.
Boys, lads.
How was it?
Oh, it was great. We got the beers in. It was brilliant.
Did you miss me? No. What was it like?
Come on, Boydie. Give us your hot take.
Well, first of all, let's just say that we sat in the same row as Michael Palin. Michael Palin.
We were surrounded by pythons. Terry Gilliam behind us. Michael Palin to the left of us. Bill Bailey behind us as well.
Bill Bailey behind us, yeah. But Michael Palin, obviously legendary co-Monty Python alumnus, literally had to squeeze past James
twice.
And me. Twice?
Yeah.
And was so apologetic. I'm not kidding you. He was just, I'm so sorry. I'm going to have to squeeze past. I'm really, really sorry. I'm like,
you're absolutely fine, Michael Palin.
Gets to do what the fuck you want to do on this night of all nights.
He's such a nice guy.
He's such a nice guy. And that was just incredible. That was worth the price of, not that we had to pay, that was worth the price of admission alone. Lots of random celebrities and comedians, yeah. But as for the show itself, I really enjoyed it. Yeah, it was, the thing I was most worried about was people having to impersonate and do their own version of these absolutely iconic characters, Basil Fawlty, Polly, Sybil, Manuel, the core group of characters. But it's so brilliantly cast. The main guy, I should probably...
So it's Adam Jackson Smith.
Thank you. What I was doing was, when I went off camera just now, I was...
You get the program.
Listeners, I was trying to find the program, which I couldn't. And they are going to do it properly now. But anyway, yeah, the cast. So what's his name again?
Sorry, Adam Jackson Smith, who plays Basil.
He does an incredible Basil Fawlty. And I think the main thing that I decided was the key to the whole thing. They all threw themselves into these roles. Like, he went hell for leather. He's like, if I'm going to play Basil Fawlty, if I'm going to essentially recreate John Cleese as Basil Fawlty, I'm just going to have to go for it.
Because it's a tall order.
It is literally a tall order.
Literally, yeah.
But he pulled it off brilliantly. The woman who played, like, Polly, you know, Polly,
Victoria
James
Fox.
This out.
Yep.
She, thank you, caught her slightly odd Anglo-Australian accent beautifully. Mm. I mean, Manuel, Sybil, they were just all fantastic. So I think anyone who's a Fawlty Towers fan, as we all are here, and, you know, thinking, oh, yeah, but is it going to be like, you know, slightly embarrassing to watch them trying to be as good and funny as the original people. You just forget about that within 5 minutes because they're all so brilliant. And it's three episodes kind of smushed together. And even like the supporting characters from those episodes are also brilliantly done. There's a character called Mrs. Richards, who is the one who's deaf, who's constantly fiddling with her hearing aid. Yeah, and she's brilliant. She's literally like a facsimile of the original character. So you're not getting anything new, right? There's the odd line of James, who literally can recite in the entire scripts of all episodes willy-nilly. I'm pretty sure there were one or two new lines in there, but hardly any. I mean, it's just all of these old episodes put together. Yeah. Yes, Kay. Kay has a question.
Did you say it's a mashup of all the episodes?
Not quite. It's basically a single narrative which has been written from the scripts of The Germans, The Hotel Inspectors, and Communication Problems. And they've kind of worked those three into, but instead of it being like one episode, two episodes, three episodes, the three of them run concurrently. So like scenes from one episode will bleed into scenes from the other episodes and some of the characters. So the characters from all of them essentially persist throughout all three stories. So Mrs. Richards is around for the events of The Germans, for example. So it's actually kind of wild. But as Boydie was saying, like what this is hard to walk the line here because it's part performance, part mimicry, because they're not playing these roles their own interpretation. They are mimicking the performances from the TV show down to the intonation of almost, but not quite, every single word. So Adam Jackson Smith just gives almost flawless John Cleese all the way through.
Wow.
Every line delivery that Cleese does. And I'm fascinated to know what their prep for this was, because they, you know, unlike, I mean, I know this whole show off by heart. Maybe they do too. But if they didn't, they will have had to watch these episodes dozens of times. Boydie's waving the program. Presumably it says in there they had to do it. But they absolutely nail it. You know, Victoria Fox, she gets perfect Connie Booth. Anna Jane Casey does spot on Sybil. And it's weird. Like, weirdly, Hemi Yeroham, who plays Manuel, his performance actually diverges from Andrew Sachs' performance quite a bit, which is quite interesting.
In what
way? I wonder if that was deliberate. Just the line delivery, the intonation, the cadence is different. He's obviously got the script and has a passing familiarity, but he does his own thing with it.
Yeah.
And that's true of a couple of the characters. So I didn't know he was a theatre legend, but apparently he is Paul Nicholas, who plays the Major. He, again, just does his own thing. He does not attempt to ape the Major from the TV show. But there's a guy, Stephen Mio, who plays Mr. Hutchinson, which was Bernard Cribbins' role, the late, great Bernard Cribbins,
yes,
who played it in The Hotel Inspectors. Again, he's pretty spot on as well. So it's really funny just watching this and seeing where, you know, there are little bits where you're like, oh, there's a line missing there, or oh, that is slightly different, because everything is so faithful that when something deviates ever so slightly, I really noticed it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And there is one particular line of the Majors, those who know will know, it involves cricket and the Oval, and they begin that line in the thing, and you could feel the tension in the room as everyone went, oh God, are they really going to go there? And I almost think they did it deliberately. Like the line delivery goes, I took it to see India, and then he goes, at Lord's, and moves on. And actually it got a laugh because he deliberately doesn't go down the, shall we say, very problematic line that original scene did, which I thought was really, really funny. So I think they did an incredible job of turning these into a single story. And I really, really liked it. And all the way through this, I don't know how you felt about this, Boydie, and we won't spoil it for anyone who's going to see this, but I was fascinated to see on what particular note they would end the show. Are they going to end it with the send out from the Germans, the send out from Communication Problems, the send out from the Hotel Inspectors? And I thought I could see where it was going. And it did end where I thought it would, but it ended with a new delivery of that final line that I thought they were going to go. So that was surprising. And I was a little bit mixed on that, but maybe because it wasn't quite what I was expecting. But yeah, it was a really, really, really good show.
Oh,
and John
gosh.
Cleese was there. We were looking for him the whole way, but of course he was in a box. And he did a little speech at the end, which was
which
nice.
Which we couldn't see.
We could just hear him.
We couldn't see.
Yeah.
Well, we could see it. We had really good seats, so I'm not complaining.
We
literally
did.
In the same row as Michael Palin, as I mentioned. But we couldn't see John Cleese when he gave his... Thanks to the end.
No, I was just going to say, as someone who, like James, can recite every single line and who absolutely loves this show, first of all, I'm delighted that James particularly was bowled over by this because it means that it's going to meet my high standards. But also, I can't wait. I'm going to buy it with actual money. I'm going to buy tickets to see it because, you've just given it such a rave review. Can we establish some facts? Which theatre was it in and how long's the run?
It's at the Apollo on Shaftesbury Avenue. I don't know how long the run is. Have they announced how long the run is?
That's a good question. Yeah, I don't think they have. I think it's I think it's open-ended. I don't think it's a limited run. Good. I think that, I'm sure okay. they're hoping that it goes
so
on for a while.
So we have time to see it. Yeah. Us yeah. normal folk who didn't get to go yeah. on... we didn't get invited by boys.
You mean, yeah, those who are less favoured by boys, I think is what you're saying.
Just outright lying now.
Thank you.
But no, also, yeah. I should point yeah. out, like the set design is really, really good. They it's a very economically designed set that uses, you know, the foyer, which is where most of the action happens in Fawlty Towers, as a bedroom set as part of it. But the way that, and the dining room and even the office, like the iconic locations, they've managed to work them into a single set, which actually I thought was really, really smartly done. And they eject the scenes, the outside scenes from those various episodes as they rewrite them, which again I thought made perfect sense as well.
And did Basil the Rat feature, or did you just
no.
see him off? All right, fine.
No Basil, although obviously referenced because yeah. Manuel's hamster.
References to the rat.
Yeah, yeah, there are references to yeah. the rat, and also Manuel's hamster is a line from one of those particular episodes. Those are really good choice of episodes because Kalisa said those are his three favourite episodes.
Oh, okay.
And I mean, it's hard to argue those probably are the three best because Mrs. Richards is absolutely iconic. The German one is just hilarious in all of its problematic glory, and it holds back on almost nothing. It's just absolutely incredible. And the hotel inspectors with Bernard Cribbins is also a genius one.
I've just remembered we're talking about how accurate the actors were. Like even the German family, didn't you think like yeah. they were so close yeah. to the original? Like those details yeah. of those minor characters was absolutely incredible.
But some of the changes I was trying to fathom, because there are a few lines which, for example, Cleese used to shout a couple of the lines, and they made... This is what fascinated me, that they're so faithful to the lines, but then a few key deliveries, they'd made the decision to change. And I'd be fascinated to know why those particular lines they altered, because it seemed quite arbitrary to change those when they weren't changing anything else. Like,
there will be
strange.
A reason. Cleese will have a reason.
Like, I have absolutely no... Or maybe he's just like, I never liked the way I did it and I would prefer to have done it like this.
Oh, yeah,
you
maybe.
Know,
could be that.
Perhaps it was
get
just
him on
that.
The phone.
Yeah, that's it. Call him up and find out like why the change was made. But really good. Although I did notice, like, Manuel's pigeon Spanish at one bit was different. The pigeon Spanish he used in the show was fractionally different. So
we won't begrudge him, though.
No, we won't begrudge him that, though I really should spend less time watching Fawlty Towers. I think we've established that. But all in all, a great night was had by us.
I'd rather you watch Fawlty Towers than Friends. I mean,
Boydie, come now. I'll tell you what, Boydie, when the Friends stage show comes, I will give you my plus one.
Oh, God.
God. I'm not sure about this well, romance that's going on. I'm getting cut out of. Furious. I have plans at night.
Sorry.
Just FYI. The Fawlty yeah. Towers night.
After
yeah,
the fat
plan. That is the truth. That's the truth of the matter. Yeah. That's not. And the other thing they did, which we didn't even see, by the way, which we were told about, was they had the car outside the theatre.
Yes.
You know what? Which Basil
with a branch on it.
With a branch. They recreated that outside the theatre, but we didn't see that because it was too hectic.
Was it Lord Schneid's stunt?
I guess so.
Yeah, because it was a bun fight out, so because they had a red carpet, and obviously because they had pythons and stuff in it.
What
yeah. so
did you boys
like
wear?
Ah, yes. Well, I was wearing something by Givenchy. No, I wasn't. I was.
You should have worn it next week.
Givenchy.
I couldn't think of a designer because that's not really my thing. So that was the
Listen,
first one. I don't know what that says
dramas
about
designers for you to remember. At least one.
Yeah.
I should have been Dior.
It was like a mixture of Gucci. It was a mixture of Gucci and Givenchy, and you ended up with Givenchy.
I actually think you should have worn a tweed jacket in honour of Basil.
I should have gone full 70s tweed. That would have been the way to go. If I owned 70s tweed, I would have done that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Definitely. Basil does have a very fetching cardigan in this, which I wanted to
steal. Nasty little cardigan.
Yeah, so that was good stuff. Right, Boydie, what else have you been watching other than, you know, A Play With Me?
Well, I've been watching a couple of things that are coming up in that irritating way. The Outlaws Series 3, Stephen Merchant show, because I did an interview with Stephen Merchant for Heat magazine.
It is wonderful. Everyone should read it. I'm rarely praised, Boyd. I'm loath to do it, but it's a really good interview and it's
Fair
out
enough.
This week.
Mm. Well, thank you. Yeah, he was on brilliant form. He's such a good interview, Steve Merchant. He's one of those people who you know you can rely on him to deliver the goods in a chat. Even like, because I sat next to him at the BAFTAs. We had the tables like 5 feet away from him at the BAFTAs, and he came over and said hello, and he was just really funny and, you know, engaging, even in the 2 minutes I spent talking to him at the BAFTAs. That's how smug and self-indulgent is this already, by the way,
I'm
talking about?
Yeah.
BAFTAs, Stevie, yeah. Anyway, continues from there. We may well be reviewing that next week. Who knows? We'll see what else is on. Season 3 of that show. The Outlaws. I forgot the name of it. Then on, I've been watching this show that Benedict Cumberbatch is in, coming up on the Netflix. And obviously that is heavily embargoed. And but I'm interviewing Benedict on Monday for
it's
this very
Eric.
Podcast. Thank you. It is called Eric. Abby Morgan wrote it, and I'm interviewing him and Abby on Monday. So I've been working my way through that, and we will definitely review that. Whether we have to wait until Pilot Plus because of the embargo, or not,
heavily
I'm not sure.
embargoed,
but it is heavily embargoed.
I suspect
it's fascinating.
I suspect it will be a monster hit. Get it?
That's good. Good.
Yeah. Well, Kay is referring that, listeners, in case you don't know, to the fact. I think this is out there, isn't it? Yeah.
So
the fact that
the whole
premise is that Benedict's character has a 6 foot puppet, Sesame Street style puppet, blue puppet next to him, with him. It's like a kind of like alter ego slash persona slash imaginary friend thing. Yes. Who's a blue 6 foot furry monster. So there's that. Yes, I've been watching that and can't say, obviously, we'll be judging that when we review it, but I can't wait to watch the end of that. And anything else? No, that's it, I think. Yeah.
That's a fairly good run. What have I been watching? Not an awful lot, to be honest. I went back to Star Trek Discovery to pick up with that, and I watched one more episode of that. And then stopped. And I will go back to the rest of it, but I am finding it a bit of a slog. Like, it's just not the most interesting. And this whole quest of the week thing, it's just a bit like, oh, I don't know. Look, maybe it'll pick up, but it's the final season. So I will 100% finish it. But let's just say I'm not in love with Star Trek Discovery. I will say a lot of people within the Empire office, and indeed listeners to this podcast, exhorted me to go and watch the rest of X-Men 97, because apparently it's like the greatest thing ever. And I was just like, life's too short for this Saturday morning 90s cartoon. However, professional that I am, I fired up the final episode, having skipped all of the others. And there's a lot going on. Like,
that's not like you. Wait a minute, you skipped.
I know, but
whoa,
I'm
whoa,
not.
Whoa.
Yeah, I know. Whoa. I know. It goes against my beliefs. I do concede that. But ultimately, life's too short for me to watch. Like, I can't sit through. Because the thing is, even watching this final episode, like, the animation is just bad. Like, deliberately bad, because it's a look. It's a style. They've gone for it. This is fine. But it doesn't look good. And the voice acting, I hate to say it, I don't enjoy the incredibly mannered, like, over-the-top voice acting. It just takes me out of it. Even more than the animated style, the voice acting bugs the hell out of me. But I'm not going to dwell on this, because you know my feelings about this stuff. I will say, tons going on in that final episode. The amount of Marvel characters in it was just off the charts. I genuinely counted, I gave up counting, but I'm sure I got to 30 or 40 Marvel characters cameoing and generally appearing in this episode. So it was kind of wild. So I can totally see that it's a lot better by the time you get to the end of this series than it was when I began it, because that first episode is so dull, but it clearly does pick up a lot. Will I go back and watch the ones I missed? No, I won't. But I will no longer be quite as sneery. So I'm saying that's a win.
Is James doing one of his self-questioning sessions? Yes, he is.
Am I doing that? Yes, I am. Also, so on Pilot Plus last week, we reviewed a little show called Bridgerton. Lots of sexy chat about gazebos and stuff. That's right. But the thing is, we haven't watched the first episode of this particular stretch of Bridgerton, which is, it splits into two parts, isn't it? 1 to 4 and then 5 to 8. So Bridgerton is famous for Regency covers of modern pop songs, right? Had I made it to the fourth and final episode this, I would, of course, have discovered that Taylor Swift's Snow on the Beach makes its appearance, which is kind of exciting, right? There's actually a list that went out of all of the things that are on there. There's a bit of Nick Jonas in there. There's a bit of BTS is in there. Mm. Billie Eilish gets one. Sia's got a song in there. Pitbull. So there's a lot of stuff in those first four episodes. But yes, in that final one, there's a bit T-Swizzle. So that's almost enough to make me go back and watch the rest of it, but not quite.
One more thing about the Fawlty Tales. Sorry to bang on about
it. Okay.
But I am inspired to go back and watch them again. I mean, that's you know, I think I might end up.
But didn't we establish they're not being shown anywhere?
They're all on YouTube. Well, they're on YouTube. So, yeah, they're all on YouTube. Yeah. So if you, even if you can't stream them, you can find them on YouTube. So if anyone listening to this does want to watch Fawlty Towers and has never seen it, it's on YouTube. So,
I mean, I think I've got the box set, but still, I just want to.
But you know, if you didn't, you could do that. Boy, did you ever watch the Only Fools and Horses stage show?
No, and you know what? A specific reason why is that one of my best friends, whose taste and erudition I fully admire, went to see it. I had tickets to see it, right? And so one of my friends went to see it early on in the run and walked out in the at halftime.
Oh, wow.
Couldn't stand it at all. And I'm a bit averse to musicals at the best of times anyway. I'm not really a fan. So I just couldn't bring myself to go after that. So I gave my tickets away. So wow. I never saw it. No,
you gave your tickets away?
Yeah. And he was a massive Only Fools fan. Like, absolute massive fan. As much as we are about Fawlty Towers.
Wow.
And I like Only Fools as well. Not as much as Fawlty Towers. But yeah, I could not face it.
Had a long
and
run,
when I told someone... Oh, yes, I think it's still on. I think it's touring.
Yeah, it's not the same theatre that it was at.
I think it's touring, in fact, now you mention it. When I told someone yesterday I was going to see Fawlty Towers on stage, they said, oh, the musical. I was like, no, thank God it's
thank
not on
God.
Musical.
I would hate it.
Exactly. But you can imagine, can't you? The Germans, for example, the silly walk to song and dance routine.
Yeah.
But yeah. Thank
the silly
God,
walk
not
remains intact, and he does it very well.
Has he got as long legs 100%. As Basil?
Yes, he does. He's got very Cleese-like, sort of like spindly physique. It's very good. Very good indeed. Right, okay, that's what we've been watching. We move now on to Chapter 2 of the Pilot TV podcast. For those of you listening on Spotify, this is Dr. Bashir with the good beard.
This is nuts. I'm looking forward to seeing if it does actually translate.
This is, of course, the listener question. Kay, what have you got for us? Kay has just pulled a facial expression which leads me to believe she is, shall we say, a touch unprepared for this week's podcast. Yes.
Wait a minute. Is this so banging on about my memory loss again? You know, let's just emphasise that someone has forgotten to do something that's a key element of this podcast.
I was so shocked. I hit the microphone. Do you know what? I've been off for, it feels like forever, and so I've forgotten the format. I can only apologise.
That's fair. But look, we're gonna be nice to Kay this week. And the reason being is that because we have had to do this episode remotely, because our office is closed, which means the studios are closed. We're doing this remote. And Kay's Wi-Fi, which is among the worst Wi-Fis in existence, was so bad today that Kay has gone to her mum's house to record this podcast. She's recording this podcast live from her mum's front room.
Yeah.
The carriage clock ticking loudly in the background. And,
poor Mrs. Wood, she's exiled upstairs while trying to keep as quiet as possible. So, yeah. No, I am in the rib shack.
I think she should do a cameo appearance, like, Ramesh Ranganathan's mum pops up in a lot of his stuff.
She's as much a character, but I wouldn't, let's not unleash Mrs. Rib on this.
No, this does remind me very strongly of when Terry used to do this recording remotely. At one point, her mother-in-law started hoovering around her while she was doing the podcast. Mm. I was like, I can't, I don't know what to do with this.
Yeah, that was extraordinary, yeah. So, listen to the question then.
Okay. Yeah. Right, I've got one which you guys can answer.
Oh.
So, it's from Gary Allen, and he says, TV shows that knew when to end and did so on a high. I'm not talking limited one and done, but shows with at least two series. For me, the ultimate is The Leftovers, which got progressively better, then went out with a bang. Not shows with great endings, but consistent quality.
It's all about, like, you know, you want to as it essentially quit while the banana is still fresh, as it were.
I feel like Fawlty Towers actually did that.
Yeah, it did well, famously, only having two series. Ricky Gervais cited that as an example as to why The Office only had two series.
Although, yes, and in fact, I addressed this point with Stephen Merchant in the interview, in the aforementioned interview, and he said that he regrets not doing a third series, at least a third series.
I think that's an exclusive, Boyd. I think that's a great line. It's fantastic.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, maybe, hopefully. But yeah, he was really interesting. He said basically, like, he thought they were naive. If they hadn't been so naive and green, if it hadn't been the first thing they did, you know, The Office was the first thing that Ricky and Steve did on TV as a creative team. Yeah. One of the greatest shows of all time. And he was like, we were very innocent and naive, and, you know, they decided to end it. Very much influenced by the Fawlty Towers model. But he's like, but they had brilliant characters with brilliant actors playing them, and they could have had loads of ideas, you know, which have to at least enough to fill out a third and probably full series.
Well, American said, Office obviously did that, didn't they? They took it
well, exactly, really. exactly. And I said, what about the beauty of the Christmas specials that ended the UK office? And he's like, yeah, of course, but then we could have done them after three or four series that have delayed that, you know, delayed those Christmas specials. So he regrets it, basically. I mean, so it's very interesting, but yeah.
So it's also worth saying, like, while we're saying, like, Fawlty Towers quit while it's ahead, it didn't so much quit while it's ahead as quit because Connie Booth didn't want to do it anymore. So, you know, it's not like they were like, yes, we're going to stop now. We all want to continue doing it, but we're making a decision. Like, that wasn't it.
I suspect that they would have done that. You know, like, I think they would have always known when to end it.
Possibly. We very nearly didn't get a second series of that because Connie Booth didn't want to do it, which is why there's like a 4 or 5 year gap between series one and series two of Fawlty Towers, because Connie Booth didn't want to do it and then eventually did. But, you know, it doesn't surprise me that they didn't want to do any more after that. So
I think once the Gavin and Stacey special has happened, I think that will be the perfect ending as well.
Yeah, that's good. Yeah, that's, what was it? That was like 3-4 series and a few specials. Yeah, I think. So that, yeah, they've done it definitely kind of like parceled out fairly carefully, Gavin and Stacey. They haven't exactly milked it, you know. It's been a selective number of episodes for that show, that's for sure.
But do you think, like, besides The Office, like, how many TV shows can you name where people have not fallen out, you know, not had logistical reasons why they couldn't do it, but have just decided for the sake of quality and integrity to walk away from a show? Because it seems like, you know, that may be a reason that people cite, but I'm not sure it's always the reason. Because, like, even when The West Wing ended, right, like, it was like people were saying, well, you know, we thought it was time, they'd go out on high, but that's not the reason. It's because John Spencer died is the reason. And while they could have continued after that, and yes, it's true, they didn't feel that any of them really wanted to continue after that point. So it's not like they were like, no, we have plateaued, you know, we've reached a pinnacle, let's just walk away. I don't think, you know, because what, capitalism.
What, The Leftovers, was that, because there was three, right? Three series.
Yeah.
Which, was that, I remember it didn't do very well for HBO. It was never a hit. The ratings were pretty low. But I feel that creatively they wanted to end it there.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Our listener was saying that, yeah, he was saying it gets progressively better and it went out on a bang.
It does. Yeah. And he's absolutely right.
Yeah.
But, you know, how much of that was, I mean, look, there are two reasons why you could do something. They might have just run out of runway and just been like, look, this is the story has just come to an end. Like, we don't have anything else to go. But also, you've got to imagine that HBO probably said, look, you can have another season, but they weren't going to let them go on indefinitely because, as I say, it wasn't like a massive ratings hit. Like I say, I don't know. I'd have to ask Damon Lindelof. I don't know why they chose to do that.
If you could
get
just
on the phone
him.
Along with Cleese.
I did talk to Damon Lindelof quite extensively for the final season of The Leftovers. It's true. And which I thought was the best thing. And in the middle of our interview, it was a phone interview, he got cut off and just disappeared mid-sentence. And when we got reconnected, I was like, I cannot think of a more perfect way to end a Leftovers interview than you just vanishing mid-sentence and me not knowing what had happened, because that was brilliant.
The other thing to say, sorry, is that, of course, Ricky and Steve kept on that model of just the two series for extras.
Yeah, that's right.
And indeed, Life is Short. So they kept sticking to the two series model until Afterlife, when he did a third. So they definitely was a thing for them as a creative team.
I mean, you've spoken to Ricky a number of times about this. Like, when he carried on doing Afterlife, was it because he loved it because it was cathartic because of all these things, or was it because Netflix reversed a truck full of money up his driveway?
What an image.
I mean, by the way. Merchant was very funny about how much extra money they could have got with the third of the series. He was absolutely honest about that. But no, I think the difference between Afterlife and his other stuff was there was such a big ensemble of characters. That's what he always said about that. That, you know, and he felt like he could carry on writing for those characters on and on and on. So that's, I think, he says the main reason why he wanted to do a third series is to catch up with them all and give them more stuff to do, etc. As well as the main central storyline about his character.
That's interesting, because you remember Bill Lawrence said that with Scrubs, because Scrubs ran for its 8 seasons, and then it came back for that awful, dreadful, we pretend it doesn't exist, ill-fated 9th season, where most of the cast had left, and it was mainly new people, and some of the series regulars were just in it as kind of small supporting roles. And Bill Lawrence's thing for that was, he said, I've got mouths to feed, I've got an entire crew of people whose job is to work on this show, and I want to be able to continue to give them work. And that was certainly what he said was the reason why they did that 9th and final season. But I think we should all still pretend it doesn't exist.
Yes. Okay. Agreed.
Yeah.
Oh, God, I always forget about that.
Yeah, rightly so.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know if we've answered that question, but I guess we gave it a shot.
Listen, we've said some words and that's all we can be expected to do.
We've said some words. We've said some words. All right, fine. Well, that is the end of this week's listener question. If you wish to have your question addressed either here or on Pilot Plus, do send them to us or to Kay specifically on Twitter at Kay Ribeiro, or to us at Pilot TV Pod on Twitter or on the Instagrams. Right, let's move on to chapter 3 of the Pilot TV podcast, Beware the Elephant of Woe. time now.
It's getting
worse. For this week's guests, Rachel.
Do you know what's weird?
Yeah, go on.
Sorry. Do you know what's weird is that I know you haven't seen it yet, but I watched Furiosa, Mad Max Saga yesterday,
seeing it tomorrow
and
morning.
They have chapter headings. The film is the film is divided into chapters. It's one of those films, and the weirdly pretentious titles like the one you just did. So
perhaps they did it just for Spotify.
He's on trend.
Maybe,
yeah.
He is very much on trend.
Well, we've got Rafe Spall and Esther Smith here. And as you will, of course, be aware, they are the stars of Apple's parenting comedy Trying, which does return this week and we'll be talking about a little bit later on. And this first episode begins with a rather more somber tone as a character's died and we're all invited to the funeral. But do not mourn just yet, because this interview is far from funereal, as the pair speak to Jordan King.
So it is my absolute pleasure and delight to welcome to the Pilot TV podcast the stars of Trying Series 4, Esther Smith and Rafe Spall. How are you both?
Yeah, doing really well. I'm just looking at your DVDs behind you on this Zoom to see if there's anything that I'm in. No, none.
If you looked like if it was a few inches lower, you would see the Hot Fuzz, Shaun of the Dead, all of those.
I'm sure that's the face of everyone.
I'd say to everybody that they'll see
to every actor,
on my shelf.
If this camera is only a few inches lower, you'd be able to see your complete oeuvre behind me.
Your complete oeuvre, exactly. And if there was a box set of Cuckoo, Esther, there would also be a box set of Cuckoo on my shelf.
Well, there you go. I believe you.
Such is life. Congratulations, first and foremost, on Series 4 of Trying. I mean, me and my wife started watching this show when it first aired in 2020 during lockdown, and we've sort of followed it ever since, and it's sort of gone from strength to strength, series to series. And obviously at the start of this series, there is a big time jump. We're 6 years further down the line. Nikki and Jason are married. Their kids have come home with them now, and they're a lot older than they were the last time we saw them. I just wondered whether for the listeners at home, you could sort of bring us up to speed on where we find Nikki and Jason at the start of Series 4.
So it's 6 years after you've last seen them. They have these two kids, Princess, who's 15, 16, and Tyler, who is 10, 11. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So almost a teenager. So essentially in a household with two teenagers. Jason's been essentially the stay-at-home dad. Yeah, we just kind of meet them at this point in their lives where they're just Princess wants to find her birth mom. And so they're having to deal with that and also having to deal with living with essentially two teenagers and what everything that brings.
Yeah. And it's safe to say that there's a lot going on for both of you over the course of the series. I wondered as well that because obviously you're dealing with a time jump here as we get into Series 4, what was the process like for you guys coming into it with there being this 6 year gap? Like did the showrunner and creator Andy Walton, was there like a Bible of here's the last 6 years month by month, or is it like here's a few key things that have happened and the rest was like left for you to explore and to sort of imagine for yourselves?
I think it was probably the latter. Yeah, no, there was no such Bible in existence. We were just I remember him talking about the idea for it when we were shooting season three, that if we were lucky enough to get a season four, then there would be a time jump. And I thought that was really cool and quite unusual in the modern television landscape. You don't see many time jumps, especially in comedies. Although I think they serve you in a certain way because it's always weird when the kids are suddenly much older, you know what I mean? Like, and we're trying to pretend that they're not. He kind of gave us a few pointers of what might have happened. The rest of it was for us to fill in. But ultimately, Nikki and Jason are still together and they still really love each other, but not without travail, not without problems, like all normal couples. You know, they have their issues. And I think that's part of the fun of watching the show. That's why it's identifiable. Yeah. It's because they do argue, they do fall out, but they tend to resolve things through humour, which is the package that this show's all wrapped up in. It's a funny show, and I really love that aspect of it, that it deals with a difficult situation, but with humour. I think that's very
human. Yeah, definitely. Definitely. And like you say, there's obviously these big changes that are happening for the characters when we find them here. And chief amongst those, and the thing that you obviously do notice first, is Princess and Tyler are not small children anymore. They are, you know, Princess is very clearly a teenager now. And Tyler is sort of like, he's coming, just starting to come out of his shell a bit more as well, which is lovely to see. And I wondered for you guys, like, what was it like to bring Scarlett Rayner and Cooper Turner into the fold here? Because, you know, a lot sort of said about how great your chemistry is, and it is across all four series, it's been great, but there's a real natural, immediate sense of a chemistry between the four of you as well. And I just wondered, like, how was bringing them in? And, like, was there anything that you guys were doing to work on that chemistry, or was it just there from day one?
Yeah, do you know what? They're two brilliant human beings and brilliant performers. They're just so naturally, I don't know, they just naturally fit in. And we had chemistry reads with to find the children, to find the right pairing. Both of them, when they kind of came to us, we were like, yeah, obviously. They're just so, I know they've both got such a brilliant quality. And also, it's clear that they're not the same people as, you know, the same actors from 6 years ago, but that kind of doesn't, you kind of forgive it that, because I don't know, just what they bring to our characters as well, how then that affects our dynamic within that, is just so lovely, and just a joy to work with. Both of them, aren't they?
They are. They're lovely, lovely people. And, you know, Cooper's completely charming, but he's still a kid. Do you know what I mean? Like, he's really good at acting, and but he's really into his football and his sports, and he's really good at school, and, you know, he's still a child. Whereas Scarlett, even though she's playing much younger, she's 20 in real life. And so she's coming at it with all of the dedication and inspiration and wonder of a young actor, professional actor starting their career. So they've got slightly different flavours. But in terms of how we get chemistry across, I think a lot is made of chemistry, and it has been on the show, and we're really happy about that. And it was obviously paramount to the viewing experience. But you can't get chemistry without really great writing. And this show is because of Andy, the creator, the writer of every single episode, which is rare in this modern landscape. Not many people write every single episode of their shows.
I feel like the quality is consistent throughout every series. I'm always like, not surprised, but just like everything that he comes up with.
I always wonder at the consistent quality of like something like Modern Family. But then you have to remember they've got a massive team of people doing all those jokes all the time. Yeah. They've got the best joke writers in the world all together writing those stories, where it's just Andy.
I know. What a break.
I mean, he has help. Obviously, he's got script editors and other people to bounce ideas off. But ultimately, the buck stops with him.
Yeah.
And that's really amazing.
And it is, like, when you're watching it, like, obviously, as the credits come up every single time with created and written by Andy Walton, like you say, that is a rarity that you get a show that's, you know, a singular vision. And I do wonder, like, obviously, you guys have been playing these parts now for 4 years. I believe at this point you've done at least more episodes of this I know, Esther, you did a long time on Cuckoo, but you've done more episodes of this than anything else that you've worked on before. And like with Andy's writing, like the thing that really impresses as a viewer is that it is so natural, and he's got this like really keen ear for like how humans actually speak. And so even in like bizarre situations, and like series four takes us to some really strange places. There's like triple dates with Jim Broadbent, and there's, you know, running off to Brighton and all these different things that happen. You know, it always feels like almost it hasn't been written. It feels like it's just a camera's on people as they move through the world. I wondered at this point, because you've been doing this for so long with these characters, is there more of a like space for you to improvise at all within the script, or is it always just so good that you just read what's on the page?
I love reading what's on the page. I think we do have license to improvise a little bit. I think you're a lot better at kind of.
I'm just louder. I think that 99.9% of any of the jokes that have ever made you laugh in trying, or any of the moments of pathos, all come from Andy. Mm. Like any bits of improvisation that we throw in, they might just be to make things feel a bit realer or whatever, or, you know, use your own natural vocal patterns. But all of the good stuff, the clever stuff, that's all him. And so you want it to look like it's improvised, and you want it to look like we just come up with those ideas, but all the jokes are from Andy.
You don't want to mess with it too much as well, because it's obviously everything, it feels so well thought through and has a link to something else. You don't want to mess with it too much.
Yeah, because it is a science, and you know, he writes a joke on every page, right? And so our job is to deliver that joke without looking like you're doing so. And that's where I suppose any sort of level of skill comes in, is selling gags without demonstrating that. Mm. But again, the writing lends itself to that. So even you were talking about, you know, this is obviously a caper-filled shows, and you need capers for your characters to get up to sustain it. But no matter how sort of outlandish the caper is, there's always an element of truth, so they're just about believable. And to me, that's what I'm always across. Like, sure, this is a potentially ludicrous situation, but could it actually happen? I think you've got to sort of be the logic police, and that's part of our job as actors, is to be the logic police.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And so I quite enjoy that, but he makes it very easy.
Yeah, and I think you touched on something as well there that was really nice about, obviously, if you're working from the script and you're getting to sort of read a lot of this as written, which is sort of a takes a weight off of your shoulders if you're not having to think of, you know, what could make this more funny here and here all the time. This is quite a rare show as well, where like you get to actually use your own voices and you're speaking with your own accents, which is lovely to hear. And you're in places that are familiar to people that live and work around London as well. And I just wondered, like, at this point for you guys, like, how much of, like, is there a percentage where you'd say this is how much of Esther is Nikki, this is how much of Rafe is Jason? And, like, because you've done it for so long now, does it come back the other way? Have you found parts of those characters coming back with you into your lives?
Yeah, 100%. It's so funny. Like, there are certain things that I'll do or say, particularly certain things I'll say, where in my brain I'm going, well, that was a very Nikki thing to have said, which is so, because we, like, you know, we are different people, but you're right, our accents are the same. There is definitely a percentage of me in Nikki. I'd say quite a big percentage, but there are differences, and it is kind of hilarious when they do creep into each other. And it is funny doing something over such a long period of time, over 4 years, and going back to work and going back to, you know, something that is so familiar, it's so lovely, it feels like it's your kind of, I don't know, it's your like second life, it's like your other life. And it's such a lovely place to be, it's such a lovely bubble to be in. Even though this, you know, the storylines are, you know, are really emotional, and actually maybe it's because of that, you can't help but feel so connected. I find it so emotional, this job, just because of, I think, the subject matter, and I know what that means to people, but also essentially apart from the subject matter of adoption, and trying to create a family, you know, it is just about people, you know, as you're always saying, just people trying to do good, and you can't help but feel for people who are just trying to do good and bring good into the world.
There's definitely a lot of me in Jason, and it is really nice to not have to do an accent or wear a ruff or whatever it might be.
Speak to a tennis ball.
Yeah, exactly. Speak to a tennis ball. The thing that I'm doing at the moment, I managed to do an accent, and it's a real pain in the ass. But if you're doing an accent on something as an actor, 90% of the thing you're thinking about is the accent. So it's really nice to like wear jeans, not have to do an accent, and have a very short commute to work. These are all the many small things that make trying such a dream job.
Yeah, that's true. We get to film in London, which is amazing.
Yeah, it's wicked.
Yeah.
We love it. We're so proud of it. It's really, you know, I've done plenty of things I'm not proud of in my life and as an actor.
As an actor. just disclaimer out there. As an actor.
Well, no, not that many things that I'm not proud of, but things that, you know, hadn't necessarily turned out in the way that I would have hoped. But this is an exception to that. This is something that we love doing. We love talking about it. It's a force for good in the world. It's a lovely thing. Mm. And I'm very grateful for it.
Me too.
Yeah. And I think it comes across, like I've listened to other interviews with you guys about the show and, you know, watching it, like, I don't think you can fake the sort of joy that is within it. If you see what I mean, like
you can
tell a forced smile from a real one. And a lot of the time there's, because the character dynamics are so strong at this point, there is the sincerity underneath all of the emotion. And I wonder as well, like for both of you, whether you give much thought to the fact that like we're in a TV landscape at the moment where we sort of tend to associate the quality or like the superiority of certain shows as being, you know, darker, bleaker, grittier, like how much more sort of torturous can experiences be? And like you both have said, like Trying is a show that it confronts a lot of serious issues. And this season you go to some really like deep places. And like for you, Esther, when you take the trip to go and sort of talk to a specific person from Princess's past, like you're dealing with complex human emotions, but it's always with this note of optimism and there's a light to everything. And you always rely on the fact that things will pan out. I wonder what for both of you, you feel like is the reason that Trying has broken through a little bit and become like a comfort blanket for a lot of viewers.
Well, I think it's exactly that. I think it's the hope within it. I think it's there's always hope, even in like the darkest of moments, there's always hope. And I think it's maybe nice to be reminded of that. And that reminder is, you know, through shows like this, or, you know, and I think that's why people enjoy watching it. I think it's hopeful.
Yeah. And, you know, I think in the name it's called Trying. And all of the audience would identify with what it is to try. Obviously, we fail a large amount of time. But if our intentions are good, then if we're trying to be good, we're trying to do the right thing, then when it comes to the end and all the checks and balances are assessed, I think that's a big tick on the pros box when it comes to the sort of entry into whatever your idea of heaven is, you know, or peace is. At least you tried.
Yeah.
You know, we went to see Uncle Vanya the other day, Andrew Scott did all by himself. And at the end of it, Sonia, when she's been rejected by someone that she loves, she says, all we can do is try.
Mm.
And that's the only real thing that sustains us is trying. So I think that's identifiable. And from an audience point of view, just to keep going, because things you're never going to get to a point in your life, okay, if I sort this out, then that out, then that out, and I get that level of success, everything will be okay. That doesn't exist. The shit continues in perpetuity. And so the only way that you can deal with that is by trying, by being honest, and by having a laugh.
Mm-hmm.
All of those three things are characteristics of this show.
Yeah, definitely. And I mean, I was going to ask you about what you feel like you've learned from the process of making Trying, but I also feel like, Rafe, you've gone into my brain somehow and just plucked out the answer straight away, because as a viewer, I mean, I started watching this series, like I said, when it first aired, and me and my wife had just lost our first child, unfortunately. And we have gone through the process of becoming parents twice again since, and we now have two beautiful, healthy girls. And I think that the show has a lot to say about resilience and about fortitude, and that connection between two people is such a strong and powerful thing. And I think Nikki and Jason have sort of become a model of what real love looks like. And I've got to let you go in a minute, but I just wanted to, from myself, say thank you very much for this show and for what it's meant to me. And I'm sure you hear plenty of stories like this a lot of the time. And also, in no way, sort of trying to emotionally wangle information from you, can you please say anything about Series 5 and whether it's happening or whether you know it's happening? Because the way that Series 4 ended, I can't just leave it there.
Well, firstly, you know, thanks for sharing that. And
yeah.
It means a great deal to us because it's why we do it. It's why you do any form of art, is so that people feel seen and heard. And that's really, really deeply important. You get a lot of messages from people that have been through issues that are addressed in the show.
Yeah, totally. And it really validates the work that we're doing, the story that we're telling. And it makes it, it feels like already an important project, but it feels like 100% more important when you kind of, you know, have people reach out and tell you personal things that to do with the subject matter and being a parent and losses and wins. And yeah, it means the world to hear those stories and to be able to offer something that is hopeful and yeah, makes people feel less alone. But yeah, in terms of Series 5, we have no idea.
No, it'd be good, wouldn't it? It'd be good.
It'd
be good from your point of view as an audience member, but also from us. That'd be really terrific too. So this is where
hashtag keep trying begin.
We'll see. We're really lucky and fortunate to have done 4 seasons. So anything more is a bonus, really.
Absolutely. Well, thank you so much for your time, guys. It's been lovely speaking to you both. And yeah, you hashtag keep trying begins here. Season 5 has to happen.
Thanks very much.
Thank you. Take care, guys. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
That was Rafe Spall and Esther Smith. Time now for news, a.k.a. Chapter 4, Slouching Towards Bethlehem. Let's talk news. And more importantly, let's talk Three Body Problem. Because when Boydie and I were at Fawlty Towers, we got the news alerts that Three Body Problem has been renewed. Come on! We are in a stable era at last. I'm very, very psyched. Kay in particular looks thrilled about this.
Do you know what? Sorry, the reason I'm pulling her face, I probably shouldn't.
You were trying to remember what Three Body Problem was.
No, I probably shouldn't admit to this. I've obviously had a bit of word blindness. Boyd often accuses me of like misreading stuff. I thought I read an article this morning that said it had been cancelled. And I thought, so that's why when you...
Oh my God.
Yes, that's why...
What is going on?
I don't know. It's really mad. Like when he started talking about it, I thought, oh God, yeah, they're going to be so... In fact, when I read the news, I thought, oh God, Boyd and James are going to be so gutted about this.
I mean, maybe that... I mean, this is Netflix. Maybe that's what happened. They renewed it and then instantly cancelled it straight afterwards. Who knows?
Not that I doubt you, but I am just going to Google it while you carry on talking.
Fair enough. Yeah.
Okay. This is... Yeah, we're not lying, honestly. What is weird about this thing is, though, right, the announcement was, is that the official announcement from Netflix does not say it's season 2. That it says they've ordered additional episodes, which is what everyone is like, what does that mean? You know, what they have said is they'll take the story to its conclusion.
Oh,
right?
Okay.
So that's the good news. And it's brilliant news, in fact. Brilliant news that we'll see more. But it's just slightly oddly worded and avoiding just how many episodes there'll be. Will it be just a second season? Blah, blah, blah. It's odd.
Yeah, it is odd. It makes you think that maybe they're just greenlighting a few feature length things to cover off the story. Like, I can't quite. The wording seems very deliberate. Like, not season 2, but we've greenlit additional episodes. What does that mean? I don't know.
Just to confirm, I have Googled it and Variety have confirmed that James and Boyd aren't lying. It hasn't been cancelled.
Okay, good. Yeah. That's good to know. But at least it's coming back. I'm very excited about that because that would have really properly pissed me off if that hadn't gone back. So that's very good news. What else have we got news-wise?
Good news. Heartstopper 3, season 3 has been announced. The date has been announced even. So 3rd of October, we'll be getting season 3 of Heartstopper. So if you love that, you're in for a treat.
Good. We've had some trailers. Don't know if you guys have had a chance to see them. But 3 big TV trailers dropped this week. We had the trailer for House of the Dragon, the new trailer for that, which looks exciting. There are No shock. Dragons in it. But that looks really good. I'm so excited about that show coming back. I really am. I'm most excited about that show because I loved House of Dragon. But there was another big fantasy show, you may remember, called The Lord of the Rings, The Rings of Power. That is coming back too. And the first trailer for that dropped, which showed Charlie Vickers as Sauron returning in his new elven form, which is quite exciting. Kay, that Rings of Power, I genuinely think might push you over the edge. Because so dense and so earnest. And I remember when they screened it for us, me and Boydy went and saw the first two episodes, and there were technical problems, and they could only show us the first one and not the second one. And Boydy was like, thank fuck for that. It was really good, by the way. Boydy just didn't like it.
Oh, God. If Boyd's saying that, though, then I've got no hope.
Yeah, it was not really good. It was quite boring. And The Lord of the Rings, The Rings of the Lord.
Yeah.
Also, they confirmed the return date, didn't they?
Which is quite soon. Yeah, August.
I'm very pleased for everyone. All the Lord of the Rings fair. There's so much. Lord of the Rings relentless, isn't it? It's the fucking Gollum film.
Yeah,
oh,
the Rohirrim film as well. Yeah, there's quite a lot going on there. But there was another trailer, which you probably were more excited about. Dune Prophecy, formerly Dune the Sisterhood, the Dune sort of prequel. And when I say prequel, it's set 10,000 years before Dune Part 1. So it's a big prequel that had its first trailer. And it looks like, it has a similar sort of like Spartan aesthetic to Denis Villeneuve's films. We saw Emily Watson in there. We saw Olivia Williams in there. We saw Mark Strong in there as the Padishah Emperor of House Carino. I was pretty psyched about that. Did you like it, Boydie?
Yeah, it looks great. Yeah, doesn't it? I mean, as in the visuals. And I'm not in the James. Who is? who else is in the James Lord? Dune obsession level. But I'm a fan of the Dune.
Yeah, love the Dune. The Dune saga is good. Yes.
Love the Dune saga. Yeah, so I am excited about that. Much more excited about that than I am the return of Lord of the Bloody Rings, the Bloody Rings of the Lord.
Were you similarly psyched for the first two stills? We saw the first two images from The Last of Us Season 2.
Yes. Yeah, that's exciting. Yeah. Just that they're... Wait, because how long do you have to wait for that to come back?
I don't know. They're shooting at the moment, so it's hard to say. Next year, yeah.
Next year, yeah. So, yeah, there's a long time.
There is a long time.
Return of that.
Yeah, it was Ellie, Bella Ramsey in a parka, and Pedro Pascal as Joel with slightly grey hair. But for those who know the game, they know exactly what scene that is because you can see the fairy lights in the background. So I won't spoil it for anyone, but yes, we know that scene.
Oh, that's proper nerdery, that is. I salute you. Yeah. Very good.
Okay, so I'm taking a sidestep now into comedy for comedy fans because there's been some good news in that Juice and Such Brave Girls has been commissioned both for second seasons.
I didn't like Such Brave Girls that much. I might need to give it another chance because it became a bit of a thing. Like, people loved it. So I reckon I might need to give that one another go because it didn't. But then it had a very distinct tone to it, didn't it? Which I maybe struggled with. The thought was almost certainly mine.
Yes. We didn't talk about the BAFTAs, did we?
We haven't. No, winners, you're right. We should talk about the BAFTAs, shouldn't we?
Because there were some weird ones and there were some good ones.
Weird ones being that Happy Valley didn't win more.
The biggest, I would say, the two biggest surprises of the night were Top Boy winning drama series and beating Happy Valley. Mm. And by the way, also beating Slow Horses and The Gold.
Well, you've been saying for years that I really do need to watch Top Boy because I haven't seen it.
You do need to watch Top Boy. And Top Boy is really, really good, right? I absolutely will say that. But I'm sorry, it is not Happy Valley, And I'm going to say the same thing about the international section. So in the international section, Succession was in there, The Bear was in there. I mean, you'd even go as far as saying The Last of Us was in there, and that those three shows are probably three of the greatest shows of recent times, okay?
Mm-hmm.
But no, the winner in an amazing moment of BAFTA decision making was Class Act. Was what?
What even is that?
It's a French drama on Netflix that no one has seen. I haven't seen it. I barely heard of it. And I felt so sorry for the winners. They must have been told. These French guys.
They handled it well, to be fair. I mean,
they handled it very well. They were like, just almost like embarrassed themselves. Like, it was like, oh, yeah, we made this show. It's good. We like it. I'm sure it's great. I haven't. I
I hate people who judge stuff without having seen it. Do you know what I'm going to do this weekend? I'm actually going to watch
it. Yeah. Report back next week. Tell us if it was a miscarriage of justice.
But it is not a miscarriage of justice. Succession is one of the, five greatest shows of all time, probably. Closely followed by The Bear and The Last of Us. These things are decided by jury. I've been on many a BAFTA jury. I'd love to have been a fly on the wall in this jury. I really would. Well, how the fuck did this happen?
So now these are, lest we forget, because we've talked about this before, they're based on one episode of the show, right? One episode and only. And they can't think about any other episodes, just that one episode.
Yes.
I wonder, given that that's the way BAFTA works, do they almost not have an obligation to tell us which episode these awards are based on? Because this is not an award for best show. It is an award for best episode of a drama. So it's actually not what they're positioning it as.
No, but then, I mean, the people, the producers, the big cheese of the, you know, they're the ones choosing the clip. So, I mean, the onus is on them, really.
To pick the best one.
Yeah.
Yeah. To be the best clip. Yeah. And like, you know, so.
Yeah. That's true. Yeah. The creators of the show choose.
And it's a whole episode, not a clip, right? Like, it's the entire episode.
It's a whole episode.
So they have to pick one. So
I kind of think it's on them. I mean, it's on them. It's on definitely on the judging panel, of course. But I mean, you have to choose the best material you have. And for some reason, and you can imagine the episodes, the Succession and Bear and all of, you know, they would have been brilliant. So I don't know what the judging panel were on. I mean.
But I do think, having said that, I do think James is, you've got a good point. It's one of the best good points from Jane. Because in a way you're right. Yeah, savor this moment. In a way you're right. What we're left with is a list of the best episodes of these shows. So that's a good point. I never thought of that before. I thought, by the way, I mean, it's kind of infuriating when you're in the middle of one of these BAFTA juries and literally the poor chairperson has to keep reminding us not to mention any other fucking episode. And it happens all the time. So it's a real thing when you're actually in the jury. But you're right. It's best episode of this drama series. We should say on the plus side, The Sixth Commandment, Sarah Phelps' Sixth Commandment won Best Limited Drama.
It did.
Quite rightly. Brilliantly.
Yeah.
And she was on fantastic form.
She gave a great speech.
Great speech.
Props to Phelps. That was a good win.
Yeah. Timothy Spall won Best Actor for the same show. Beating Steve Coogan, Pape Seydou, Kane Robinson, Dominic West, Brian Cox. He beat Brian Cox. Mm. That was a bit of a surprise for some people.
Yeah.
Not for me. I've always thought Timothy Spall was going to win. From the very first, I'm not making this up, the very first screening of The Sixth Commandment that I went to, I was like, he's going to win a BAFTA for that because he's so fantastic.
I voted for him to get the RTS.
Ah, there you go. Oh, yeah, you're on that RTS jury. Do they have the same rule? They do, don't they? Do they? I think they might have brought in the same rule.
Yeah.
About the one episode. Yeah, yeah.
Okay. Madness. Absolute madness.
And Sarah Lancashire won Best Actress for Happy Valley. So Happy Valley didn't go home empty-handed.
It's worth noting, Such Brave Girls, which is what started this conversation, beat Big Boys in scripted comedy. Mm. Obviously beat Dreaming Whilst Black and Extraordinary as well. But, you know, Jack Rook's Big Boys, which is obviously great. Interesting.
Such Brave Girls is really good as well. It's really, really good. So that's all I'd say, I think. But I love both those shows. So
Do you know what? I would be fascinated to know, like and knowing these shows as we do, like I almost feel like I'm so desperate to know what episodes they chose. So for example, The Last of Us, would you choose the Bill and Frank episode because it's widely regarded as the best one, but it's not indicative of the show as a whole. So
I guarantee they would have chosen that episode, yeah.
But then can you choose a different episode for each category? So if you're, because for example,
I think so,
yeah,
yes.
Okay, well,
yes,
that makes can, slightly more sense.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. So for the acting categories, they'd choose.
They'd pick a Pedro Pascal showcase one for him. And okay, that makes sense. But
we should say actually, because I was talking about Juice, and actually, Mulan Rizwan won a BAFTA as well.
Yes, indeed.
And did Mel a great performance in a comedy. This was hilarious.
Mm. Hilarious, yeah. It was brilliant. Yeah, the whole Juice gang, Russell Tovey was there, etc. Yeah, thrilled. Couldn't be more excited for that. Yeah. He's brilliant.
Yeah. Good shit. And
good shit.
What a summary.
Yeah.
There we go. Good shit. I'm
this
saying.
Is some good
please,
shit,
can someone
guys.
Put that on a t-shirt? Because I will.
Hey,
wear
look,
it.
You know, if you really want me to get into a deep dive, Scam Interceptors won Best Daytime Show, beating out Loose Women and Men, Lorraine, and Make It at Market. I don't know what any of these things are, but apparently that's a thing.
The way you said it sounded like Make a Tit Market.
Yeah. What are you talking about?
That's a show I would watch. Okay. Fair enough.
Of course
that's
you good. Would, you perv.
That's gonna be good in the chapter headings.
Yeah. Make a tits market, chapter 5.
Oh, God.
Jesus Christ.
Right, what non-BAFTA related move? So it's worth noting, so I have, as you know, been long waiting to find out when my beloved Walking Dead spin-offs are going to be coming to the UK. Turns out they're coming to the UK on Sky Max. In fact, every season of The Walking Dead dropped on Sky Max, I believe, this week. So it's available now. And The Ones Who Live, which is the Andrew Lincoln, Danai Gurira, sort of the most recent spin-off, I should say, that is going to be debuting on Sky Max on the 31st of May. However, perversely, the previous two spin-offs, The Walking Dead Dead City and The Walking Dead Daryl Dixon, have not got dates yet. They will be on Sky Max later in the year, but we don't know when. So it's all a bit arse over tit at the moment.
Yes, it's weird, isn't it? But at least the I mean, the one that people are most excited about, because it's got Andrew Lincoln in it, is coming. That's good, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. You know, and you know that I'm excited about, because I haven't seen that one. So yeah, so I am pleased about that, and we'll get to review it on this podcast.
The BBC have announced the cast for a new revenge thriller called Reunion.
I like the way Kay just drove coach and horses through.
Couldn't give a Walking shit. Dead. He's moved on.
Yeah, because by the way, Kay, James had about 20 minutes more to say about the
Oh my gosh, I'm so sorry.
No, it's fine. That was it. I was done.
No, I'm joking. All right, I'm joking.
Okay. So they announced that Matthew Gurney, Laura Peake, Anne-Marie Duff, Eddie Marsan, and Rose Ailing Ellis will star in the thriller. And it's four parts. And apparently, the series marks a milestone in inclusive storytelling, with the majority of the cast and many members of the crew being deaf or using BSL. So,
good stuff.
Mm.
Almost as exciting as news, and this is film news, so Boydie will like it. Downton Abbey 3.
Hey!
Yes!
Come on!
Yes.
Come on, you callies.
Oh, wait a minute. So we are now going to be allowed to talk about this, right?
Yes. It has a TV connection, so we're allowed to do it.
We always regard Downton Abbey film announcements as TV news.
Yeah. Oh, I can't wait.
Yes.
Yeah, it's very exciting.
But it's Downton without the Dowager, and I'm saying that's a big swing. Mm. So will that work? Dominic West is coming back. That's interesting.
Hmm.
Yeah, he was great. I really liked his character. Yeah. He was fun. Mm. Yeah, he was
maybe
he
we should do
fun.
A pod outing to go and watch it together when it comes out.
I thought you were going to say a pod outing to High Clear Castle.
Yes, that's what we should be doing.
I've been there.
Afternoon tea. Let's go.
Do you remember this? I did a episode of Five Lives TV review show back in the day during the height of Downton. I think Richard Bacon hosted it, and we literally did a whole episode from Downton, the real life Downton. Yeah,
it's so bloody starry and like.
But it was so brilliant as well, because it is an incredible place. And I remember we interviewed Hugh Bonneville was there, blah blah blah, and the owner, lovely woman who owns it, told us how there are so many rooms in the I think it is High Clear
Castle,
yeah. There are so many rooms. There's some of them that no one's ever been in.
Oh, wow.
Like she said, there's a room at the top. She pointed, you know, she said no one's ever been in
a haunted attic.
Like, that is insane. Yeah. So.
Bloody hell.
There you go. That's my memory.
That's a bit like
Downton,
my house.
The real Downton.
Yeah, it's much like Hayes. Yeah. Okay. Any more news before we wrap this up?
No.
Boydie was about
a new Kevin.
Big inhalation from Boydie, and then
no. There's a new Kevin Williamson show, but it's fine. I don't care.
Yeah. Okay.
Who cares?
That's the end of news then. Yeah. Okay, on now to Chapter 5, Attack of the Erudite Marmoset.
But do you know what it is? It's how happy it's making him.
It is making me exceptionally happy. Yes, I'm enjoying this enormously.
I'm particularly excited about the tip market.
Yeah, same. Yeah.
Okay, it's time for reviews, God help us. And first up this week, we do have Insomnia on Paramount Plus, which is an adaptation of the book of the same name by Sarah Pimbra, author of, incidentally, entirely batshit TV drama Behind Her Eyes, which still holds the crown for the most insane plot turn of any show we've ever seen. And I include Sugar in this conversation. But Vicky McClure in this stars as Emma, and she's a woman who, shall we say, has a complicated relationship with her mother. And her mother suffered from severe insomnia and psychosis. However, with her mother now in hospital, Emma's finding herself struggling with an all too familiar sleep disorder, which I think is fair to say goes beyond just being a bit tired all the time. Speaking of which, Kay, was insomnia a snooze fest, or did this one keep you up?
Yes, it did. It's really good. It starts off in quite a scary fashion. Well, it's quite unsettling, the whole thing, because it obviously dealing with themes of insomnia, trauma, etc., in high stress situations. It's very disorientating and quite unsettling in lots of places. So be warned. It starts off, first few minutes, quite scary. You've got a woman who transpires as Emma's mum, muttering a sequence of numbers and then smashing her head on a mirror and collapsing. And that's within the first minute or two, so not a spoiler, but it just establishes this very dark, horror-filled tone to it. And as you said, so Emma is played by Vicky McClure, and she is a family lawyer, and she's got a, as you said, a difficult relationship with her mother, who her and her sister Phoebe had a very traumatic childhood. Her mother had psychosis and brought about, we think, by insomnia, but she basically, this all happened before she turned 40. And she said to Emma that Emma had her bad blood, and it's haunted Emma ever since. So as, and she hasn't seen her mum for like 35 years now. So Emma, as she approaches her 40th birthday, is understandably concerned because she has started not to sleep, and she's worried that she's going to go in the same way as her mother. And that's just, you know, that's the crux of it. But there's so many strands to this story that are fascinating and involving. They to do with her, you know, because she has the stress of not sleeping and the stuff that's gone before with her mum and her sister, who she has a kind of a difficult relationship as well. She doesn't want to see her mum, but her sister sort of like tricks her into seeing her, so it brings up a lot of stuff for her. But also she has stuff to do with her family, the family dynamic. She's got a partner, a husband played by Tom Cullen, stay-at-home dad, and their children. There's issues with the children, but also the character of Emma is going through, she's trying to make partner, and so she, that is also quite stressful. So I just thought it was, I thought it was so engrossing. I watched two episodes because I think it drops as a double bill. And I just thought, I thought everyone was great in it, but, and it's very compelling, but I thought it was just such an emotionally intense role for Vicky. And I thought she pulled it off really well.
I was interested to see how you'd react to this, because it's basically a horror. Like, as in, it's properly chilling. And all of the flashbacks to her childhood with the mother is quite disturbing.
Oh, make no bones about it. It totally shit me up. It's because the thing is, it's like there's, you know, and it's not a spoiler because it happens in the first few seconds. It's like she just kind of repeats this like sequence of number, but in such a sort of like sinister way. Like she's obviously, she's like possessed almost. And there's other things that happen in this first episode that also I won't spoil, but just like fucking terrifying. But it's just gripping. Like I couldn't, yeah, it didn't put me off.
There's also, there's like parents-children dynamic stuff can be really quite creepy. And there's a bit, you know, where she's like, you've got the bad blood. Of course, they used to have mad love, but, you know, not so much anymore. And, you know, it, but genuinely, like, and I don't know where this goes. I haven't read the book. I don't know anything about it. But this feels fully like it's going in a supernatural direction to me. I don't know if it is, and it may well not. But, you know, I just, it has that, because it has this really oppressive sort of like aura about it that feels full horror. And so much of the kind of like hallucinations and the psychosis and the insomnia feels like there's something else going on that I don't know where this is going. And also, because it's Sarah Pimbra and because I've seen behind her eyes, I'm just now waiting for something completely batshit to happen. So, yeah, you know.
Also, I made the mistake, slash, actually, it was quite a good thing. On the press release that we got sent through, it had a list of the spoilers. And so I wanted to make sure I wasn't going to ruin anything on the pod.
She's
and
an alien.
And then I saw stuff and I was like, ooh, you know, so that's made me even more excited. But also the PRs have done such a fantastic job of promoting this to the journalists, because we've had so many, and not in a bad way, we've had so many emails about this because they obviously want everyone to watch it, and because it is good. Very, very good.
Yes. Is it, the question is it supernatural or not, which James has brought up. Because I don't know if you remember, but behind her eyes, had a quite a, it kind of revealed its mad batshit secret kind of halfway through, I think, roughly.
Yeah.
So that, and I think it had to in a way, because it's such an insane proposition that show is based on, that to kind of give you time to absorb the madness of it and then see how it played out, I thought, you know, worked really well. I think it was only four episodes, that series, I'm pretty sure. But I think, yeah, roughly halfway through, it revealed itself to be, and the, yeah, the in quotes, supernatural element of it. Now, I went to the launch of this, right, the launch screening, and there was a Q&A with Vicky and Sarah afterwards, Sarah, the writer. And I have to say, I was shocked at the time. This is, they showed one episode, right? And And she spoiled it, right? She spoiled her own show, right?
Really?
And she's brilliantly, she's brilliantly entertaining. She's a fantastic writer of this stuff. She's a very prolific writer of really, really interesting novels. And she's come up with some amazing ideas. And I loved Behind Her Eyes. I thought it was absolutely brilliantly batshit and bonkers and things being going to be. But it came to this and they were chatting away and she said something and I was like, no, don't say that. You've completely kind of given away the answer to that central problem, the issue that, you know,
well, James has raised.
Yeah. So I'm not going to say which
But that's crazy. Yeah. So whether she'd said it was or whether she said it wasn't, both of those would be an equally big spoiler. So we are in no way indicating which way that falls.
No.
Exactly. Yeah. Right. So that. So there's that.
And I don't know.
I've now watched four episodes. And what's really interesting about this, there's six, four or six. What's really interesting about it, it does get, it is like very horror-y and creepy and all of that. And that is there from the start. And why is she, what are these numbers that she's reciting? That's right in the very first scene, isn't it? Mm. She recites the numbers. So, you know, there's like extra weirdness going on. But even within the family drama context of this show, it gets mad. So mad shit starts happening.
That's what I was sort of alluding to, the spoiler that I read. I was like, what?
Oh, right. Yes. How annoying that you read that spoiler.
No, it's fine.
Because I didn't read that spoiler. So there's batshit stuff happens within the family anyway that you could make an entire drama series out of, basically. And that's just a subplot of the main madness involving Vicky's character. Then there's like, she meets a whole new character who's not in episode one at all, in episode two. Right, who, this isn't a spoiler again, she basically drives by accident, she drives into this woman on a bike, and that kind of begins another strand of the story. So it's quite densely packed,
yes,
with different layers.
There's so
and
many
strands
to it,
which is, as you say, makes it very, very compelling and a kind of rich tapestry of bonkersness. But I still haven't got to the point, even though I still haven't got to the point of real bonkersness that I assume, as James said, you're going to get from the creator behind Her Eyes as to what the fuck is really going
on. You might be overselling it, overplaying it. Maybe there's no bonkers element.
I think there is.
Really?
I think there will be.
You're guaranteed bonker.
Well, let me just say this. The other thing is, this was written after. So she, Behind Her Eyes, and this came later. This novel came out in 2022. And it's already, and then she adapted it herself for this TV series. Well, that's a quick turnaround, isn't it? Like from, you know, you get the books out, blah, blah, blah. Then about 18 months later, whatever, the TV series is with us in all its bonkers glory. I keep saying the word bonkers.
Cookie bonk.
In all its... The cuckoo bonks glory. So I think she's aware of her role now. A bit like she's the M. Night Shyamalan of novel writing, because I think people are expecting something freaky and weird from her in the way we expect a big twist from an M. Night Shyamalan film. And I think she's aware of that. Let's just say that. But great fun. Vicky McClure is brilliant. What an absolute showcase for her. She does brilliant emoting and stressed out anxiety acting.
Oh,
and
stressful.
She's fantastic in it.
Very stressful to watch.
I thought Tom Callan was a really convincing stay-at-home dad, kind of like a bit wet and kind of slightly, you know.
Wait, what are you saying?
I just have seen this play out. I think the kids really like kind of prefer him more to the mum, you know, because she's the one who's having to work all the time and be stressed out. I just thought
it's good cop, bad cop, right?
Yeah, but I just thought her relationship with her sister was fraught, and the sister has so many. I forgot about it. The sister has a whole subplot of her own.
She does.
Side note as well, I've just got to say, Property Porn. I really like their house and
lovely house.
Also, I'm not being reductive, but Vicky McClure's wardrobe. I'm a big fan of it as well.
Oh, yeah. Mm. Yeah, totally.
Great silk shirts going on.
Yeah. Very lawyer, very,
Yeah, a bit like
lawyer about to be made.
A bit like The Split. The wardrobes,
That's right. Yeah.
Silk shirts a go-go then in Insomnia, which airs on Paramount Plus, Boydie, on what day?
Thursday, the 23rd of May. I'm not going to say it.
Good. I'm banning him. I'm banning him from listing the year. It's too passive-aggressive.
It's so boring.
Yeah, I bet the AI wouldn't mind if I said 2024.
Yeah, Boyd, you got it in there.
They probably wouldn't. Okay, next we have the return of Trying on Apple. Now, this is now in its fourth season, and which you've already heard the stars talk about. Boydie, this begins with a funeral, but is there life in Apple's parental comedy yet?
Yes, I really love Trying. I'll put it out there. Absolutely I've loved it from the start. Remember, this show's evolved, though. So to start with, Trying was about a couple desperate for a child who go through all the options and decide to try and adopt. And really, a large part of the first couple of series were about the hurdles that you have to go through to adopt kids, to adopt a child or your children. And it is, as anyone who's been, I know friends, Kay knows people, colleagues that have been through this process of adopting, and it is so difficult, and there's so many layers. And I thought the first couple of series of Trying really cleverly addressed all of those points and kind of showed you the mad reality of how hard it is. Quite obviously, they have to make it hard, because that's the whole point. But Esther Smith and Rafe Spall as the main couple, Nikki and Jason, brilliantly believable couple right from the start as well. Like, they're, you know, I think it's a relationship based on humor. They're both really funny. They both have the same sense of humor. They both kind of deal with outsiders from their world in the same way. They've got like best friends played by Sean Brooke, the brilliant Sean Brooke of Blue Lights fame. She's fantastic as the slightly obnoxious, haughty woman who kind of thinks she's above it all. And her husband, Scott, played by Darren Boyd, who I love as well, who's in great form. He, one of the funniest elements, this opening episode, as James said, is set in a funeral. And one of the funniest little jokes is what happens to him, without spoiling it, at the funeral. Mm-hmm. I thought it was hilarious. And he pulled it off really well. It's that horrible W word that people say about comedies that I often find means it's going to be a bit wet. Which is warm. It's very warm.
It's a cozy comedy.
And yet it's not. You see, this is my point. It is warm.
It's full of heart.
It's another way of putting it. But I don't think it is cozy. I think it's also got toughness to it. That is there when it needs to be, there's a toughness to it. So, and it is, you know, it doesn't skip over the harsh realities of real life. Like, I really like the fact that his dad, played by Phil Davis, doesn't want anyone to hug him or touch him. You know, I thought that's a really...
That's like when I try and hug you.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. It's a no hug zone. So I thought that was really good. I just think it walks the line between funny. It's funny enough for it to definitely be a comedy. You know, we have these debates about whether something's a comedy or comedy drama. It's definitely a comedy. And yet it's moving and sweet and warm enough for it to feel very real and authentic and plausible at the same time. It's not over the top. It's not silly. So James wouldn't like it. I actually think it's a really quality show. And I'm really pleased that Apple keeps backing it to come back. And this is its fourth series now.
Yeah. I completely agree with everything. I've always liked it. And I think, particularly in this episode, Sean Brooke is great, haughty. She's fab. And one of my stand-up moments, you mentioned the dad, is like this thing of Jason being unable to / too scared to say I love you to his dad. Yeah. And his daughter likening it to the nerves he felt around saying gracias in Spanish. And that he just has to have more confidence. But they just have a different love language. And it's actually one that's connected to Boyd's favourite pastime. So everyone finds different ways of communicating. And it's really funny. I think it's really... clever way of exploring that, how, you know, sometimes particularly men don't feel they are able to say these things to each other. But I just think it's another, I'm excited for the new series, and I think it's another great show.
Which is, this picks up six years on after from the previous series. So they're the kids, the siblings they've adopted, the girl and the boy, she's a teenager, he's about to become a teenager. So that's what the situation is now. They're definitely a family. It's all about really family life and bringing up adopted kids, and do they get in touch with their adoptive parent or mother or whatever. So that's where we are with the thing, which I didn't even mention in my review.
So to begin with, it was the fear of not being able to have kids and not being able to adopt, and now it's like we've got the adopted kids, but will they like eventually want to see their birth parents, or will we lose them? It's that kind of fear.
And these are new actors playing the kids, I'm assuming.
Yes.
Since I have not kept up with Trying.
Scarlett Rayner plays teenager Princess, and Cooper Turner is her is Tyler, her younger brother.
Okay.
They're both really good, really, really good.
Yeah, no, they are good. So the warm thing's interesting to me, because I always associate warm comedy with, you know, products of the 70s and 80s, you know, where they're just a bit cheesy, not very funny, kind of like those kind of warm hug of a shows where they're comforting but not challenging. And you're right, this has slightly more edge to it than that. And not loads. It's not like an edgy comedy. It's not Fleabag. But, you know, it has a... I can understand it being a comfort comforting show. You know, it starts, this particular one starts with a kind of a who's the funeral for, which was very reminiscent to me of the Four Weddings and a Funeral Final Wedding thing, where they're just kind of covering up the invitations. But I was following at a distance because there were a few things that happened in this. I was like, as someone essentially joining this in the fourth season, I was like, I don't fully understand what's happening. Or like there's pointed glances with people. I'm like, I don't know who that is. It's, you know, I was a little bit lost.
James, I was the same because I haven't kept up like fully. So yeah. But it didn't mire my enjoyment of it.
No, and some of it's universal. The stuff with Rafe Spall and his dad and they're trying to tell him he loves him thing. I mean, it's just genuinely quite gently funny, isn't it? Like it's quite cool. And it's quite sweet because, you know, it is the how the Paul K is in this. I don't know if he's in it normally, but he made me giggle in this.
He's very good as the pub guy. Yeah. Pub landlord guy. Yeah, he's brilliant.
It's quite fun. Trying has long been on my list of shows to essentially catch up with, but it is a long list, so it's not, unfortunately, not near the top. But
it's on your sofa app.
It's on the sofa app. It is genuinely on your sofa app.
Yeah. I have downloaded because of your endorsement. Yes, I'm using Sofa now. Yeah, yes. You should get some money for this.
What
James.
Have you got on there? The Expanse, Star Trek: The Next Generation, Deep Space Nine,
Game
all the
of
good
Thrones,
stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. Game of Thrones was a fucking short-lived feature on this podcast, let me tell you. We got one episode.
One person enjoyed it, and that was you.
And it wasn't you. Yeah. Oh God!
Maybe we should do Lord of the Ribeiro.
Yes,
Ribeiro of the Lord.
Yeah,
when that
Lord
comes
of the Rings,
back.
The Keys of Power.
Maybe.
Yeah. Oh yes.
Trying Apple Friday.
Good question. No, Wednesday.
Wednesday.
The 22nd of May.
Excellent.
This year.
Kay is mouthing the year. That's not happening. Fine. Right. Finally, this week we have Bay of. Hang on. Is it Bay of Fire or Bay of Fires, plural?
Do you know what?
Bay of Fires.
Well, is it?
Yes.
Because this has been wrong in about three different places.
Oh, well, let me double check.
So they can't decide. Right, hang on. I'm Googling it. Bay of Fires. Bay of Fires.
Yeah, I think it is Bay of Fires.
Okay. I'm just going to style it out this. It's good. You know what? Fuck it. Leave that bit in. let's not cut it out because I called it Bay of Fire in the introduction. We call it Bay of Fires here. But you know, whatever you like, whether you like your fire singular or plural, this arrives on ITV and sees.
No. I've also seen it Bays of Fire.
Bays
as well.
Of Fire. Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Do you know what? I'm just going to say this is a show. There's a bay. It may or may not be on fire. Insert the plural where you will. You know, wherever yeah. suits you, yeah. just put in an S.
Exactly.
And that's this show.
Exactly.
Bay, bracket S, close bracket, of fire, open bracket S, close bracket, is on ITV. And sees a woman on the run after throwing a python at a hitman and, let's be honest, murderizing a wallaby, only to end up in the Twin Peaks of Tasmania. Kay, did this slightly odd Antipodean series set your bay on fire? No, that sounds weirdly sexual and inappropriate. Let's leave that. But more importantly, I can't ask you, Kay. I cannot ask you what you think of this show. Would you like to share with the listeners why?
Oh, wait a minute. This is news to me.
Yeah, Boydo doesn't know. Oh, God.
What the fuck is going on?
Right, I'll tell you what's going on. Oh, God, look at him. He's so smug about it.
I am.
Yeah, rightfully so. Right, so before we started recording, I was saying, to James.
We're interchangeable.
I said, oh God, yeah, blah, blah, blah. Sorry, I've just had to finish that. And yeah, God, that sci-fi one, blah, blah. And he looked really crestfallen. I was like, why is he being weird? And I thought, oh no, I've used the wrong term, right? So I was like, oh, you know, the fantasy. And he's like, we haven't done a sci-fi or fantasy one this week. And I was like, what are you talking about? Orphan Black Echoes?
Oh, no.
Right. And he was pissing himself laughing. He's like, we did that last week. And I was like, oh my God. I was so annoyed with myself, right? Because basically, I watched it just before my internet was, you know, patchy. And I was like, oh, I've got to watch it. I've got to watch it. And I knew it was sci-fi. And I thought, right, just have an open mind. Stop being a dick. Just watch it, right? So I was watching it. And I was like, okay, I was trying to find the positives, and then three quarters way through, I was like, "This just isn't very good." And James confirmed, "Yes, it isn't very, isn't very good." And he can't believe I sat through it. So
I can't believe you sat through it. But also, you've denied me the chance to use a K of Fires pun as we go into this review, and for that, I shall never forgive you. So we have to turn instead to Boydie. Boydie, tell us about Bay or Bays of Fire or Fires.
The reason I know, funnily enough, the tedious reason I know that the different ways it's been wrongly attributed the title is because in our internal system at work, where we work, it was wrongly titled in the big, like, you know, thing.
And I had to like, yeah. And then they corrected it. And it was like, what the fuck is this show called? Anyway, it is Bay of Fires. And you know what this reminded me of was the another Australian show. That's Sarah. Of course, I forgot to write my notes on this. Frayed. Do you remember Frayed? Sarah Kendall show.
Oh my God, I love Frayed.
Yeah, I mean, it's not as good. Oh, it's not as good. Okay. Don't get too excited.
Frayed's not coming back as well. Sorry, just side note. Carry on.
Yeah. But that was two series, actually. Mm. Two and done. Yeah, two very good series. But this one is set in the present day, whereas that was set in the 70s or whatever, or 80s. But that was about a family, a mother and her son and daughter having been forced to move back home, in her case, to Australia from Britain. And then the kind of fish out of water kind of context to it. And this has a similar fish out of water context and has a similar Australian mother taking her, frankly, annoying teenage son and daughter to this new place, the new Twin Peaks place, as James referred to it, and being forced to do so because in a flash. So it begins in the present and then in classic Peak TV style, it flashes back to fill in the details of why she's ended up in her family unit, having to being forced to move due to various reasons. And it turns out there's a criminal element to the company she worked for, etc. It's all about, and the police are investigating, and they're having to scarp her. Now, I have to say, it wasn't bad. I mean, I thought it was pretty good. You know, for a show, you know, you could say it's, you know, there's the Australian new wave of pretty good comedies and dramas. And it's definitely, I thought it was pretty well written. I thought that she's great in it. The main woman, Marta Dusseldorp, I believe she's known, plays Stella. She's really good. Carrie Fox is in it as well. I thought the way it was shot and the way and the dialogue and the acting, apart from the kids who aren't great, I would say, it's pretty enjoyable and entertaining and pretty well done. It just feels a bit like lots of things from other shows, you know, lots of elements from other shows that have witness protection things going on in them or stuff like that, or, you know, yeah, or slight fish out of water comedy elements to them. And this had quite a lot of that. But I enjoyed it, but not enough to carry on watching it.
I have to say, like, we're back to, I would say it's my old friend, the tonal shift, but it's not the tonal shift, it's the tonal balance here. Like, I think it's a really difficult line to walk properly, comedy and drama. Like, to do it well, it takes a sort of a lightness of touch, and this show does not have a lightness of touch. And I think it tries, so the tone is quirky, slightly surreal, funny, but funny weird more than funny ha ha, but it's not a drama. And in fact, what's interesting is not only have people, when they write about this show, been getting very confused about where the plural goes, but they've also been talking about it like it's been pitched as a dark thriller. And it's been pitched as a black comedy. And no one seems to be able to decide, you know, what it is. And I completely understand why that is, because it doesn't seem to know itself. Like, it's not funny enough to be a comedy in that there are literally no jokes and it's not in any way funny, but it doesn't take itself seriously enough to work as a thriller. Like, it's a bit too silly. Like, for example, you've got Rachel House, Taika Waititi player Rachel House, in here as this kind of government person who kind of rolls her eyes every time, you know, our hero sort of like calls her on the phone. And that's kind of played for quote-unquote laughs, except it's a comedic device which has a comedic tone, but crucially, again, it's just not funny because there are no jokes in it. So all the way through, you're not sure, like, am I supposed to be laughing? Am I supposed to be rooting for them? She's just thrown a snake at someone. And the hitmen in this are like comedy hitmen you'd expect to be in a comedy. But again, not funny. So you've got this comedic tone, but without comedy. And you've got a dramatic setup, but without drama. Right. And so it doesn't know whether it's sort of like fish or fowl. And I just don't think it works as either.
What a great expression.
There aren't jokes, but there are funny. Some of the characters are quite funny. I think the mother is funny. I think she's her delivery and her kind of attitude and everything she is funny. So it's not a jokey type of setup, comedy wise. But I think I don't think it's quite as as unfunny and uncomedic as you're making out. But you're right. On the other hand, as it is trying to be a comedy thriller and it is failing
miserably, essentially. Yes.
It's failing.
It's definitely failing.
Talking of Australian comedies, I had another message today, Boydo, about whether you've contacted the BBC.
What about Colin from Accounts?
About anything in particular? Just about life in general?
Just to catch up.
Colin. Hello, BBC. Hi, BBC, yes? What do you want? I've just been asked to grill you by...
Colin from Accounts.
As close personal friends of the cast of Colin from Accounts, I kind of feel like you should be in.
Why is it down to me?
You should drop them a line and find out is what you should
do. All right, I will then. Okay, fine. We've stayed pen pals, so sure.
Good.
I'll get in touch.
Okay, fine. I do need to know. Exciting times, right. Bays of Fires arrives on ITV when, Boydie?
ITV X, Thursday, the 23rd of
May. Yes, and remember to wear a corset, lest your sides should split.
Oh, wow.
What else is out this week, Boydie?
Not that much, which is why we ended up reviewing Bay of Pigs, or whatever it is.
Jurassic World Chaos Theory, which is an animated show, comes to Netflix.
Is that still going? You've put that on the thing. I don't know, but that may or may not be on,
but honestly, who cares? The Cleaning Lady returns to Witness, season two of that. That's on Tuesday.
The Cleaning Lady is the biggest new show in American TV, by the
way. Didn't know that.
Massive success already in America. There's a thing called the Gerard Carmichael reality show on Sky Comedy and Now from Friday, which is Gerard Carmichael is a really talented stand-up. And this is like not actually reality. It's like, I believe, sketches and kind of self-referential material about his life. But he's really talented. So that's worth paying some attention to. I don't think there's hardly anything else. Hold on. I mean, in our, there's the Kardashians are back on Thursday.
Oh, good.
I'm sure James is, but that is about it. Yeah. There we go.
Okay. What is our pick of the week?
It's got to be Insomnia.
Insomnia, yeah.
It is Insomnia. I think we are united on that particular front. Okay, that is the end of this week's show. If you enjoyed it, please do head on to Apple Podcasts or Spotify and leave us a whatever fucking crazy AI chapter you like rating for us. That'd be great. If you want to follow us on the socials, please do so at James C. Dye, at Boyd Hilton, at K. Ribeiro, at Pilot TV Pod. I'm going to say you don't follow us all on the socials. So, go and do that. And if you haven't left a review, don't just screen it out because I'm telling you, go and do it because I want cake, and I'm not going to get cake unless you leave us a 5-star review. So leave us a review for the sake of cake. Brackets, please. Brackets now. On next week's show, we're going to be covering on next week's show. God, let's have a look. Well, The Sympathizer finally comes to Sky. That should be an interesting one. As Boyd has mentioned, Eric is coming to Netflix. Geek Girl, I don't know if anyone's read those YA books. I actually haven't, but I know they exist. That's coming to Netflix. Obviously, The Outlaws season 3. We Are Lady Parts. Oh, my God, comes to Channel 4. What a
the
week.
Veil.
The Veil. The Veil as well. Oh, my God. And then more important than any of those things, more important, The Walking Dead, The Ones Who Live, comes to Sky Max on Friday the 31st. The Veil, incidentally, is not on the calendar, Boydie. Just, you know. Not to be passive aggressive, but just want to put that out there.
Someone's committed a crime.
But also,
and yet, the Jurassic theme
that is on the calendar because I put it there. Now, also, we have a guest-a-palooza, so we've spoken to a number of people across a number of those shows. So I'm going to have to work out some kind of scheduling thing to relieve the traffic jam. There, so we might have to spread some people out over the coming weeks. But yeah, we've spoken to some very, very good people, and you'll be hearing from them once we work out what we're doing on this week's Pilot Plus. We have yet to decide what we're covering on this week's Pilot Plus. We did a Doctor Who spoiler special. We covered The Devil's Chord on last week's Pilot Plus. That was exciting for me, especially. You subscribe to Pilot Plus and you'll find out what happened there. We're going to be pressing on with that. We're going to do the next Doctor Who episode on there, the one with the mine. And as for what show we're doing, we'll have some sort of confab after this and work out. Because weirdly, because it's quite a quiet week, there's nothing really that has been embargoed. So, you know, we're going to have to find something extra special to put on Pilot Plus this week. Extra special. In the meantime, though, and until then, until Thursday, Pilot out.